inside my veins. And it liked my feet, which I tried really hard not to take personally, continually wanting to sit on them and rub its poopy tentacles together. Yes, I know flies don't have tentacles. Just go with it. Walker looked at me out of the corner of his eye like my words were code. What's that mean? There's a fly in my apartment and it won't die. I hung my jacket over the back of the stool. But it likes to circle my head and seems to have an obsession with my feet. Nothing helps. I wear socks. It lands on the socks. I wear shoes. It dances on my shoelaces.
Is that so?
His lips pressed together while his gray-blue eyes danced as they took in my clay-spattered smock and jeans. They danced like that fly had done on my shoelaces.
Well, where are you coming from?
The studio.
You have to go home eventually. How are you going to kill it?
Any ideas? My elbow on the bar, my chin in my palm, I made no attempt to hide my desperation from my boss. Even if I hadn't been desperate, and I was desperate, I would have asked him for advice. When I'd initially started working at the Boozy Rancher, he would say things like,
"Whatever you think is best,"
or
"You'll figure it out."
Then, over time, and especially when I was going through my divorce, he'd started offering his opinion when asked, but always with a caveat, like,
"You don't need to listen to me, but this is what I do."
Or,
"I'm probably not the best person to ask, but I suppose I'd do this."
Now, he didn't give caveats or qualifiers or wait for me to ask. We were way past that.
"You try the wine trap?"
he asked. Yes. I'd made a wine trap with rotten fruit, red wine, and plastic wrap. The evil little bastard remained unimpressed, never even hovering near the lure. Maybe I should have used my socks. Walker narrowed his eyes, then scratched the stubble on his cheek. The song over the speaker switched from Thriller to Baby It's Cold Outside.
"You have a fly swatter?"
he asked. "Correct, but the bugger is fast and wily. I almost sprained my ankle last night jumping off a chair." Stalking the pestilence around my apartment with a fly swatter in the middle of the night, after it tried to jettison up my nose, did no good other than giving me an intense workout. The insect's evasive maneuvers were Captain Picard worthy. Walker nodded, taking this news in stride.
"Flypaper?"
"Flypaper." I made a fist. "No, I haven't tried that."
"Well, I have some in the back. Take it with you when you leave. Now, what can I get you?"
He paired these words with his trademark crooked smile, the one that usually made customers swoon. I, however, had been inoculated against its powers long ago. Firstly, when I'd started working here, I only had heart eyes for Rex. Who am I kidding? I still had heart eyes for Rex. Secondly, my first year at the bar had basically been a front row seat to the beginning of Walker and Ramona's love story. And thirdly, I thought of my boss like an older brother and felt confident he thought of me like a little sister. He looked out for me, and I looked out for him. Other than my apartment, the bar remained my cheapest option for lunch because Walker fed me for free. I didn't accept this generosity often, not wanting to take advantage. I returned Walker's crooked smile with my straight one. "I want a grilled cheese sandwich and tomato soup, please." Walker's smile faltered, gray-blue eyes turning flinty.
"That's not on the menu anymore."
"But I know we have bread, cheese, and butter. And I left a jar of my tomato soup in the freezer." He crossed his arms.
"Yeah, but when you order soup on a cold day, other people see it and want the same thing."
"Why'd you take it off the menu then?" I tugged a full bowl of pretzels closer. "At least keep it seasonal."
"You know we want folks coming in here to drink, not just eat."
He picked up a towel and motioned to the back room.
"Appetizers are one thing. Mozzarella sticks, sliders, chili fries, stuff that pairs well with beer. but your soup clogs the place with non-drinkers and health nuts. I can't have people taking up space eating fancy soup and sipping on water, looking down their noses at paying customers. If I wanted to run a hipster restaurant, this place would be called the Bourgeoisie Bistro.
I'd heard this rant before, just days prior to him removing the soup from the menu. I gave him a beseeching smile. What if I promise to hide while I eat the soup? I'll face the wall. Or you can put it in a glass and I'll pretend like it's a Bloody Mary. He grunted, but I could see I'd won.
Fine.
He lifted a finger between us.
But only because we just opened and it's still quiet. Once folks start coming in, no more soup.
After three, no soup for me. Got it, boss. His left eyebrow ticked a scant millimeter and he turned toward the back, giving me one last warning glare before disappearing. As soon as he left, I chuckled to myself at the name Bourgeoisie Bistro and popped a pretzel in my mouth. I had a friend who used bougie, pronounced bougie, as an adjective. Like, I don't want to go to that bougie party. Or, tell me this sofa isn't the most bougie thing you've ever seen. I wasn't quite sure how to apply it correctly, and I was pretty surprised to discover it was a real word. But as I munched on my second pretzel, I thought maybe the name Bougie Bistro would actually be a good one for a restaurant. The bell over the door rang just as I plucked a third pretzel from the dish, but the salty snack never made it past my lips, even though my mouth now hung wide open. There, once again, out of nowhere, and scattering all my neatly ordered thoughts to the four corners of chaos and heart palpitations, which is a sentence that doesn't make sense, and that's the point, stood Rex McMurtry. In my bar. In the flesh. But also in an illuminating pair of snug blue jeans and a cable-knit sweater that instigated a plethora of dirty thoughts, none of which were bougie. Snapping my mouth shut and wiping my chin, I twisted in my stool facing the wall, giving him my back. He hadn't seemed to spot me yet, so I used the borrowed time to collect my thoughts. What is he doing here? I'd taken care of him without surrendering to the temptation of impropriety or criminal behavior, hadn't I? I'd successfully maintained my composure and moral fortitude while the embodiment of my ideal man slept and then lounged in my apartment, shirtless, hair askew, jaw stubbled. It's not like I wanted a cookie for being a decent human, but less temptation would be nice. After our late breakfast, I dropped sexy Rex off at his hotel, opened the passenger side door for him since it could no longer be opened from the inside, and then I'd said goodbye. Yes, it had been a rushed goodbye, administered with a quick wave as I dashed back to the driver's seat, but I'd meant it. Goodbye. Time for me to get back to my uncomplicated, comfortable life. And time for him to return to his ivory stadium. In retrospect, the afternoon had been a singularity, a love note from a higher power. All Rex's adorable and rare smiles, his teasing. I must have done something supremely good in my past to deserve such a gift that required minimal effort on my part. The vomit mobile had been worth what came after, for sure. But then the afternoon had ended, and that was totally fine. Great, even. I'd been happy, content, at peace with our moment lasting only a moment. So why, for the love of pretzels, was Rex McMurtry suddenly here again one day later?
Abby?
A jolt of nerves, spiky, tingly electricity rushed from the base of my neck outward to every limb and appendage. I inhaled a deep, silent breath, steadying myself. I pasted a smile on my face, shoving away the clutter of self-consciousness. Rotating the stool 180 degrees, I faced him.
Oh, hey, Rex. Long time no see.
What are you doing here?
I could do this.
I'd spent a full 2 hours in my apartment with him yesterday, having conversations, not being a staring, stalkery, simpering weirdo. Heck, I'd even relaxed, forgotten who he was, settled into the conversation. I'd enjoyed his company and myself. I'd brushed his teeth for Hootenanny's sake. That was me. Another short conversation should be a cakewalk. I can do this.
Are you on the clock?
Glancing at my watch, I forced a lightness I didn't fully feel. I have a minute. What's going on? Did you leave something at my place? That's probably why he's here.
No.
He responded easily, bursting my theory bubble and sauntering forward to the stool next to mine while emanating serious BSE, big sweater energy. He looked at me like he knew me, like we were friends, and he felt completely at ease in my presence.
I wanted to talk to you.
Is that so? My stupid stomach swirled with heat. His hand braced on the back of the stool, but he didn't sit.
I'm in town for a few more days until Sunday. Do you have any time off?
I stared at him, saying nothing, trying to keep my thoughts ordered and my breathing under control, because what the heck is happening? Is he? Fantasies! Nah. No, Abigail. Rex McMurtry is not here to read quietly next to you on a couch, kiss your face off, and have sex on every surface of your apartment. This is not a high school musical porno. And you can't sing for shit. The inane direction of my thoughts made me laugh at myself. In what universe did any super famous pro athlete who could have anyone they wanted come looking for Abigail McNerney and fulfill her teenage wish list? No, not happening. If my life had taught me one lesson exceptionally well, it was that nothing too good to be true was ever real. If it felt like a dream, it would, without fail, eventually turn into a nightmare. Watching me closely, Rex tapped his finger on the seat back of the stool.
So, you have no time off?
It's just... I covered my face with my hands, my shoulders still shaking with the remnants of laughter. I'm sorry, I didn't get much sleep last night.
Why didn't you sleep? Did something happen?
His shoulders seemed to relax at my words, and the confusion around his eyes dissolved into what looked like genuine concern. Unfortunately, this change completely disarmed me. Ugh, there's this fly that won't die, and I'm really hungry. Sometimes I get goofy when I don't sleep or eat. I get gangry instead of hangry. But gangry sounds like gangrene, which is not what I mean.
Hanoofy?
He tried.
Hungry plus goofy?
Seems about right. Anyway, I have a fly in my apartment and it kept waking me up.
It woke you up? A fly?
Now Rex looked like he was trying not to laugh, surprising me with another unexpected smile.
Yes,
I grumbled, disgruntled for some reason by the appearance of his smile. Maybe Rex was a person who smiles now? And shoved my index finger upward in front of my face. It must have thought my nose was a portal to the promised land, a wondrous world filled with poop and dump trucks. Now he covered his mouth, his eyes bright. It also seemed enamored with my feet, I admitted sadly. Not sure what that says about my feet.
Oh my God, Abby, stop.
Rex covered his whole face with one hand while gripping the leather at the back of the stool with his other, his laughter now uncontainable.
I wish I could make it stop, I truly do, but I almost killed myself trying to murder it last night, and now I'm so tired.
His hilarity tapered and he sighed, the sound drawing my eyes to his magnificent hazel ones. And that's when I remembered who I'd been speaking to about my nose and feet and fly problem. Embarrassment descended like rainfall.
I really just said all that out loud, didn't I?
I peeked at him. He nodded, still smiling.
That was a good sign, right?
The smile? Before I could make up my mind, Walker's voice boomed from the back.
Here's your soup!
A second later, my boss emerged, holding a tray of food.
And it's even in a bowl. That's how you can tell I like you.
He glanced at me, then Rex, then me, then drew up short. Without putting the food down, my boss straightened and said,
You are T.W. Rex McMurtry.
The change in Rex was instantaneous. One second, he was the same Rex from yesterday, and in the next moment, a marble-like quality seemed to possess him. He grew still, stiff, his eyes distant, cold and hard. He didn't look unfriendly, but he didn't look friendly either. He looked guarded, more like the version of himself I'd gone to school with. Huh. Interesting.
That's right, sir. Nice to meet you.
Rex, Training Wheels McMurtry, issued Walker a tight smile and nod.
Well, I'll be.
Walker returned the smile with one of his own, unleashing the unabashed power of his crooked grin, an unchecked and completely genuine sunbeam of disarming handsomeness and charm. I squinted at the rare spectacle. It was the kind of smile my boss typically reserved only for his wife and son, but Rex seemed to stiffen further at the impact and blinked twice, like the unexpected sight dazzled.
You made me a lot of money 8 years ago when you were playing for Texas at Ohio. What can I get you? On the house.
Rex glanced at me, at the food-laden tray, then back at my boss.
I'll have what she's having.
I braced myself for Walker to slide me the stink eye. He hadn't wanted to serve me soup because he didn't want other folks ordering it, and now Rex had just ordered it. But to my surprise, nay, horror and shock, Walker put my lunch down in front of Rex's stool.
Sure thing.
Walker unloaded the tray, a perfect grilled cheese and a piping hot bowl of tomato soup with Parmesan croutons. My mouth watered and my hanoofy turned into hangry. Hey, that's my food. Both men looked at me, Walker rocking back on his heels.
Simmer down, Abigail. I don't think this fine gentleman was planning to flee with your food.
It's not Rex I'm worried about. I tugged the bowl toward me, glaring at Walker, then at Rex for good measure before I realized what I was doing. Man, I must have been really hungry. Rex held his hands up, a smile playing over his lips.
I'll sit right here and wait for mine.
See that you do. I mumbled. To evade a renewed bloom of embarrassment, I focused on my lunch, reaching over the bar to grab a roll of silverware.
Y'all know each other?
Walker didn't leave to get Rex's order. Instead, he brought the tray to his chest, folding his arms over it. Rex, to my surprise, answered with authority.
We went to school together.
Oh, yeah? High school?
All school.
Rex pulled out the stool next to mine, his knee bumping my thigh as he slid into place.
Elementary, middle, and high school.
How about that?
Walker rocked back on his heels again, like he needed to absorb this information.
Abby never said anything.
I took a huge bite of my grilled cheese so I wouldn't have to respond, and soon regretted the decision. Both Walker and Rex spent the next few seconds in contemplative silence, looking me over as though seeing me anew while I chewed my food. I swallowed quickly and said, "It's not like we knew each other. I went to high school with a guy named Dave Hall, too. Do you want a list of everyone I went to school with?"
"Just those that made pro ball, please,"
came Walker's dry reply. Then to Rex, he asked,
"Anyone else as famous as you go to school with y'all?"
Some of Rex's facade had dissipated in the face of Walker's easy manner, his tone now slightly less stiff and formal.
"Do you know who Cyrus Malcolm is?"
Cyrus Malcolm? I wiped all expression from my face. Cyrus and I had been good friends in middle school and part of high school, the kind who shared secrets, dreams, and sorrows. Our sophomore year, he joined the football team and asked me out, which had blindsided me since he'd known I'd pine for Rex with the blind devotion of a BTS stan. When I turned him down, things grew awkward between us, and our interactions never felt natural again. We eventually drifted apart and lost touch. We'd had just two interactions since high school. Once at my mother's funeral, and once during the early days of my divorce, both of which I wanted to forget, and neither of which had anything to do with Cyrus. He'd always been sweet, funny, and I supposed one could call him a movie star now. I hadn't thought about or seen him in years, and then, bam, he's on the big screen. Good for him. He had the looks for it and the talent. Walker's gaze narrowed, lifted to some place behind us.
"You mean the actor from that astronaut movie?"
I felt Rex inspect me quickly before confirming.
"That's the one. We went to school with him, too."
My boss placed a hand on his hip.
"Really?"
"Really?"
Rex nodded, shifting in his seat, which incidentally pressed the length of his muscular thigh against mine. I swallowed thickly at the contact, abruptly hot and no longer interested in warm food.
"So what happened to you, Abby?"
Walker teased, his grayish-blue eyes twinkling like mischievous sparklers.
"Why aren't you famous?"
Pushing the soup away, I shrugged and wiped my mouth with a napkin. "You know me, I'm just biding my time for that Nobel Prize in knitting." Both Rex and Walker seemed to think this was highly amusing.
"You are very funny, Abby."
Walker pointed the tray at me and repeated a statement he'd said often enough for it to become an inside joke between us.
"Funny like a clown with no pants."
"Exactly," I nodded, agreeing with my usual line. "It's criminal how funny I am." They both laughed harder.
"Listen, I'll be back with your lunch."
My boss rapped his knuckles on the bar top in front of Rex.
"Anything to drink?"
"I'll take a water with ice," I interjected.
"I'll have the same. No ice,"
Rex added, the weight of his eyes on me. I glanced at him and discovered him watching me with a trace of a smile. And just like yesterday, his gaze soon became a stare. I faced forward, giving him my profile, and reached for a pretzel. I didn't dare eat it. I'd probably end up needing the Heimlich maneuver. "So, Rex?" I fiddled with the pretzel, tapping it against the surface of the bar and clearing my throat. "What are you really doing here?" I sensed him move, and I glanced at him again. The smile had vacated his features, and his eyebrows pulled together.
"I have..."
Rex hesitated, like he was looking for the right words.
"A strange question."
"A strange question," I parroted. Sometimes repeating a person's statement is the safest choice in an unanticipated conversation. I'd just said something, nothing of consequence, and now it was his turn to speak. He grinned, an inescapable, magnetic event. "God, he's so beautiful. Why did you make him this beautiful?" One would think I'd be less enamored with the guy who defiled my car, couldn't brush his own teeth, and had been rude to me upon waking. But here I was, still enamored.
"It's an unorthodox request rather than question."
Whatever it was, whatever he needed, I felt certain I would say yes. and that certainty scared the crap out of me. Surely this hold he had, this place of prominence and importance I'd handed over to him years ago, even though he'd never sought it or worked to earn it, pointed to hugely wackadoodle choices and questionable mental health on my part. Furthermore, it wasn't fair to him. Here he was, wasting his time with an Uber fan, and he had no idea. But it's not supposed to matter whether my admiration-fueled wackadoodle behavior is fair to him. He's supposed to be admired from afar. Why is he not afar? Get thee afar, Rex! Rex leaned an arm on the bar and faced me, his hazel eyes holding mine while he, likely inadvertently, crowded my space.
This will sound completely crazy.
Okay. He visibly hesitated again, his attention moving to my hair.
I appreciated your help yesterday.
I waited for him to voice his request while instructing my heart to chill the F out. When he didn't speak, I said, "That doesn't sound crazy, but you already thanked me yesterday."
I know, but it's part of the reason I'm here.
Was he being confusing on purpose? Or was my brain overpowered by the aura of his BSE? What's part of what?
You don't want anything from me,
he said, the candid words taking me completely by surprise. I blinked. Unsure what to say, I glanced over his head, eventually managing a confused, "Okay?"
In my experience, especially since I started playing pro ball, it seems like
people always want something from you. He nodded, his lips forming something between a wry smile and a brittle frown.
Before I know them, before I even talk to them, they have a plan for me, a wish list.
That seems like it would be very frustrating. I leaned back on my stool, crossing my arms against the twinge of guilt behind my ribcage, because I had a Rex McMurtry wish list, most of which involved us naked.
It is, when I meet someone with no ulterior motives. It's rare.
We traded stares while the twinge of guilt became heartburn. He was wrong about me. I was not rare. I was common. And I couldn't let him continue believing I was something I wasn't. Rex, listen. I'm not who... I don't...
Abby, I get it. I know you don't date, and I respect that.
I don't date? I repeated dumbly. Instead of sounding like an echo as I'd intended, it sounded like a confirmation. But since the statement happened to be an entirely accurate one, I didn't seek to clarify any portion of it. He nodded.
That's good,
he said, then made a face, shaking his head.
I mean, that's fine. Rather, it is what it is, and it's your decision, and it's good if it's what you want. And it is what you want.
Abruptly, he turned to the bar top, a rumbly chuckle tumbling out of him.
I'm messing this up.
Breathless curiosity eclipsed my shame. What are you messing up?
I'll just say it.
He rubbed his forehead as he said this, like he was trying to psych himself up, talk himself into the completion of a daunting task. Meanwhile, I was on the edge of my seat. Finally, he faced me again. But some of the granite-like Rex training wheels McMurtry came with him.
I don't date either. Not anymore. Not for years. And I have no plans to date anyone anytime soon. I needed a break from all that and all that stuff.
Okay. Why would he tell me this? Holding my eyes, he gathered a deep breath, then said,
So, my strange request.
I sat perfectly still, resisting the urge to repeat, strange request. Just to say something. My mind darted all over the place, in every direction, working overtime trying to figure out what he could possibly have in mind, when he blurted,
"I want to hire you to marry me."
Chapter 7. The more you struggle to live, the less you live. Give up the notion that you must be sure of what you are doing. Instead, surrender to what is real within you, for that alone is sure. Spinoza.
Hire me. Hire me, I echoed on autopilot, because what?
To marry me.
I looked to my right and then my left. Say what?
I need a wife.
I was in an alternate dimension. No, you're dreaming. Am I asleep? Is this a dream? I moved to pinch myself, but then stopped. Wait, let's just see where this dream goes. His eyes seemed to spark with amusement, but his mouth persisted in its grim line.
A business arrangement. I need you to come with me to places, events, and act as my wife.
Places? What places?
Weddings.
His stare became something both interested and detached, like he was looking at me through a fish tank. Weddings.
Weddings, rehearsal dinners, parties, work events. We wouldn't really be together, but everyone would believe you were my wife. They'd believe we,
he pointed to me and then to himself,
are married in truth.
We wouldn't really be together. Everyone would believe you are my wife. They'd believe we are married in truth. I continued staring at him as I processed this riddle he'd presented, and quite suddenly I got it. I understood what he was asking. What I didn't understand was why. An uncomfortable chuckle bubbled out of me. I shook my head and turned back to my now lukewarm soup. He wants to hire me, to escort him to parties, and pretend we're married. This is bonkers. I sensed Rex's restless energy, his discomfort, but I didn't seem to care about his comfort right now, or lack thereof, or who he was, or that I should be nervous, or that I should still be ashamed, because I had a sexy Rex McMurdy wish list. Truth was, I didn't know what to feel.
Abby?
I looked up, finding Walker standing on the other side of the bar holding two glasses of water, his attention narrowed on Rex.
Everything okay?
Walker ground out, looking less than friendly. I nodded and reached out to accept the water. Thanks. Suspicion clouded Walker's eyes, turning them stormy and distrustful as they moved between us. He opened his mouth, likely to question Rex, but I gave my head a quick shake. Please, don't. Frowning, he set Rex's glass down with a thunk, grumbled something about the soup almost being ready, and strolled down the length of the bar to the other end. My boss loitered, looking over his shoulder at us, watchful. Looking out for me.
I've upset you.
Hmm? I glanced at Rex.
Did I upset you?
His expression and voice were gruff, restrained. What? Upset me?
With my offer.
No, I answered honestly, an unforced smile curving my lips. No, I'm not upset, but I'm not sure why you would want to, why you would need to, you know.
Pay someone to marry me?
I nodded, picking up and fiddling with the pretzel again, breaking off the little pieces of salt and rubbing them between my fingers. Why not just marry someone for real?
The question seemed to pain and exhaust him, and he inhaled deeply before responding.
I haven't dated anyone in over 2 years.
I sat up straighter. This news a surprise. I watched Rex's games on TV whenever I could. Sometimes I'd catch a photo of him with some fancy, accomplished lady on his arm in a magazine or on TV. But unless details of his personal life were splattered all over the place, like the attempted kidnapping in Miami or the fact that his ex-girlfriends were marrying his guy friends, I didn't follow his private affairs. I had been a kid, tween, and teen stalker, but I wasn't a stalker as an adult. 2 years? But I broke the pretzel in half. I'm sure if you asked, certainly there's someone who...
I don't want to.
He said simply.
It's one thing to have a relationship when it's just me and her, just the two of us. But when it's me and her and football, and the press and the fans, it doesn't work. Dating me is a big ask, a time commitment, a hassle.
This all sounded like nonsense to me. Dating Rex was a big ask? A hassle? In what universe?
Part of my contract with the Squalls dictates the number of events I have to attend each year, which includes public appearances like movie premieres, charity fundraisers.
Rex slid his eyes to the side, studying me before asking.
You hate the idea?
I considered the question, taking my time, turning it over in my mind. Did I hate the idea? His request had disappointed me for some reason, but my disappointment was entirely my fault. The loud, squealing with glee part of me had just received a major blow, and I had no one to blame but myself. If it seems too good to be true, it is. I knew it. I knew this intimately. But if I considered things from his perspective, the request, jarring and unconventional as it was, made a lot of sense. Maybe he wanted to focus on his career and couldn't spare the energy necessary to foster a real relationship. I supposed I understood that. After my father died, my mother didn't have time or energy for a new partner either. Spouses, she'd said more than once, take a lot of effort in life. And then when they die, the funeral is expensive. She'd run a funeral home, so her statement made more sense in that context. For so many years after my ex left me buried under his debt and my idiotic, naive, foolish choices, I had wished I'd listened to her and never married. And yet, on the other hand, and specifically in Rex's case, always going to Chicago Squall events and such without a date probably took its toll, too. In high school, he'd been quietly kind but not extroverted. Pro ball shindigs didn't seem like his style. I shook my head. No, I don't hate the idea. It's an unconventional request, but I understand your perspective. Why you'd want to hire someone.
Really?
He inched closer. The impervious facade version of Rex training wheels McMurdy fading as visible relief took its place. Yes, really. But why not just ask a friend? Ask a friend to do it as a favor.
This can't be just a favor. That would be unfair. You will have to fly places, stay the night in hotels, go to boring events. It'll be time-consuming, and you'd probably miss work here. I understand that if you agreed, not only would I be paying you for your time, but you would also be doing me a favor. I reckon it's a bit of both, a job and a favor.
Okay. It's time-consuming. I suppose I understand the reimbursing for time and expenses part, but how do I put this?
But
why me? I peered at him.
a fair question.
He pressed his palms together, as though in prayer, and pointed them at me.
I know you.
You don't know me.
I do. I remember you now. You're Abigail McNerney, and in elementary school you always beat everyone in the timed mile, boys and girls. You used to wear your hair real short and dyed black. My aunt was your Girl Scout leader.
Listening to Rex McMurdy list all the details he recalled about me and having none of them be relevant to who I was, then or now, made me feel like the subject of a bad book report. But, yes, technically he did remember Abigail McNerney. I breathed out an irritable sigh. Fine, you remember me, but you know lots of people. Why me?
You're perfect. Pragmatically, you couldn't be any more perfect. We already know each other and have since we were kids. You're an only child, both parents gone, no family members nearby.
Discomfort had me crossing my arms over my stomach. Virtually everything that made me perfect for Rex's scheme had also made me perfect for my ex-husband's. A young woman, apparently alone in the world, except Rex was being upfront about it. Also, now I wasn't alone. Walker and I were close. He looked out for me. So did Kaylee. I didn't have much in the way of family. My Uncle Mac up in Michigan, a few cousins in other states I didn't speak to often, but I did have friends. Rex added,
"But it's really because I know you and I trust you."
"You trust me? Why?" The corner of his mouth hitched.
"You undressed me in the dark, using oven gloves when I couldn't even brush my teeth, and let me sleep off a hangover in your apartment. I think if I required a litmus test as to your trustworthiness, that'd be a pretty solid one."
Okay, I see your point there.
I also thought you might be open to earning some extra money.
Leaning back, I rolled my lips between my teeth to keep from frowning, knowing he didn't mean the words as an insult. Even so, they felt insulting.
"And you're..."
He started, then stopped, and his lips remained parted, even though he didn't seem inclined to finish the thought. "I'm what?" I asked.
"You're steady."
"Steady."
"That's right."
"Like a boat." Another eye twinkle.
"Something like that. Reliable, calm. You have good judgment and don't freak out in stressful situations."
I studied him and his explanations. It seemed he'd thought this through. However, who would believe it, though?
"Why wouldn't people believe it?"
He grabbed a pretzel and popped it in his mouth. I squirmed, not wanting to ask the question, but if he was serious, and it seemed like he was, then it was a question that needed to be asked. "Do you think people would actually buy it? You and me?"
"Yes."
His forehead wrinkled, and his tone told me this was a non-issue. "I'm a hick bartender, and you're the star defensive end for the Chicago Squalls." His frown was severe.
"You're not a hick."
"I am a hick. I'm an uneducated hick. I'll embarrass you." Now he scowled, visibly angered by my words.
"Abby.
Don't you people date actresses and models?" He made a sound that was half scoff, half laugh.
"No. Most of us people are with their high school and college sweethearts, who are anything and everything. We've known each other since preschool. Doesn't have anything to do with your job. And you are not a hick."
I frowned. And it wasn't just about my job or how we'd gone to school together. I shopped at thrift stores and Walmart. I didn't dress how I thought a pro ball girlfriend would. Also, I didn't know things, and I didn't know what I didn't know. I wasn't cultured. I wasn't fancy. Finally, I decided on, I don't look the part.
Easy to fix.
He shrugged. His acquiescence on this point made me dislike him a little. Easy to fix? What a jerk! Like I was some door handle he'd broken off a car. But you said it, Abby. You're the one who said you don't look the part, not him. Yes, but he agreed with me. I slouched, pushing my fingers into my hair at my forehead, my disappointment swelling to elephant size. Yesterday, despite all that had happened the night before, I'd dropped Rex off at his hotel with his crown of perfection still mostly intact. But now, it had tarnished.
Listen, Abby, I don't want to push you into this, but I'm not going to talk you out of it. Goes without saying you couldn't tell anyone about it. No one could know.
Sigh. So, I'd be lying.
Yes.
He said plainly, his gaze stark.
I'd be lying, you'd be lying. But we'd also stick to the truth as much as possible.
How so? I couldn't wait to hear this.
We went to school together. We ran into each other here at your work while I was in town. We started seeing each other after that. If you agree, we'll marry this week. All of that's true. No need to volunteer the timeline.
He frowned as he said this, like the words tasted bad in his mouth.
And we'd leave out the part about me paying you.
And then there'd be the pretending part, I muttered.
You'd never have to do anything that you don't want to do. Nothing that makes you uncomfortable.
I gulped around something solid in my throat, not able to meet his eyes. Despite the tumble he'd just taken off the pedestal of my making, I suspected any touching requirement would be a non-issue. He hadn't ever been demonstrative with his girlfriends in high school, and the times I'd seen him photographed with a woman, in the paper, in a magazine, on TV, they'd never been kissing or anything like that. If I'm being honest, I wouldn't mind if kissing was part of the deal. The crown was tarnished, but Rex was one of the nicest guys I'd ever known, and so incredibly smart and talented. Yeah, he exuded grumpiness and irritability, or he used to, but he loved and took care of his family despite their craziness. And he was hotter now than he'd been in high school. We're talking plasma levels, people. Also, I hadn't been kissed in years. Physical stuff was the one thing I missed about being in a relationship. Assuming he was good at it, kissing would be a bonus. Maybe some embracing. Groping would also be on the table. But I would refrain from any of that if he didn't ask me. He was safe from me. To prove my good intentions, I said, I wouldn't want to make you uncomfortable either, so if we do this, you have to let me know if I, cross any boundaries in our quest to make it appear authentic. He gave me a side eye, one that made me wonder if I'd said something crazy.
Sure.
Good, I said earnestly. Rex rubbed his eyes.
It's a big ask. Think of this as a job and accept a paycheck because I'll keep you busy. Movie premieres, charity galas, destination weddings.
My stomach swirled, and for once it had nothing to do with Rex. Destination weddings? That sounded fantastic. I'd always wanted to travel, but...
You'll have to buy an iron,
he added, and the way his eyes twinkled, I surmised this was more of his teasing. Dresses. My stomach sunk.
Yep.
Breathing in through my nose, I stared at the broken pretzel in my hands.
You don't like dresses?
He guessed. I like dresses fine, but dresses don't like me. I gestured to my legs and torso. Either they make me look like a hooker or folks think I'm Amish. Everything is too short, even when it's long. I marveled at my admission and realized imperfect Rex was easier to talk to than perfect Rex. He bit his lip thoughtfully, like he was doing his best to consider my dilemma while also trying not to laugh.
Amish, huh?
Nothing against the Amish, but floral prints are a big no. Rex grinned again, leaning back as though to survey my legs and torso.
You need custom clothes. Stuff that's made specifically for your, body. I have to do it, too.
Are you telling me you're going to send me tailor-made clothes? Dictate what I wear?
No. You'll get the clothes yourself. Whatever you want, send me the bill. I'll pay you for time spent shopping or at the tailor's, too. Think of the clothes as a uniform. They'd come with the job.
Well, when he put it like that, I set the two pieces of pretzel on the bar top, absentmindedly trying to fit them together. But, Rex, even with the right clothes, what makes you think I can do this? Movie premieres? Galas? I'm just a...
Don't call yourself a hick again.
His voice dropped, his eyelids lowered by half, and the gruff demand made goosebumps rise on my arms. Fine. I threw my hands up. I'm just a country girl from the middle of Texas, more comfortable in bars and barns than at soirees. I knew my place. Once I'd tried to step out of it and paid the price for years. In fact, I was still paying.
So what? I'm a country boy from the same place. We can be country together.
I looked him over. His impeccably styled hair. His BSE. His designer jeans. He may have been a country boy once, but now he looked sophisticated. Worldly. He seemed to understand what my perusal meant because he said,
"They're just clothes. Part of the job."
But I shook my head at a loss.
"Are you worried about the time commitment? Your job here? I can work with your schedule. You don't have to go to every single event."
"I'm not worried about that. Walker won't mind. I trust I'll always have a place here even if I needed to take a break." Walker had hired me back once, no questions asked. I knew there'd always be a home for me at the Boozy Rancher, but I didn't like the idea of lying to Walker.
"If you want to give it a go, on a trial basis, I have a rehearsal dinner tonight and a wedding tomorrow in town. You're welcome to attend and see what it'd be like."
I scratched my chin, considering the offer. "Tonight?
Are you working?"
"No."
"Do you have plans?"
"Just with a fly." That wasn't precisely true. I still had a few orders to finish for my Etsy shop and a crap ton of inventory to make for the holiday shows. He grinned and then dipped his chin to his chest, like he didn't want to share his smile.
"I'll write down the address for you. And you still have my number, right?"
"Yes, I have it." He'd insisted on giving me his cell phone number and personal email address yesterday before leaving my apartment, writing them down on a sticky note. I'd put the square between the pages of my inherited copy of Edgar Allan Poe's complete works because I didn't plan to use either of them, but I didn't want to throw away the slip of paper either. Rex lifted his eyes to mine again, the grin mostly gone, now just a twist of luscious lips.
"No pressure. If you want to come, give it a try with no strings attached, I'll pay you, I don't know, $1,000?
1,000! I started to yell, but then caught the words. Forgetting myself, I leaned closer and whispered harshly, $1,000? For 2 dates?
No, 1,000 per date, so 2,000 for tonight and tomorrow.
I was stunned, and my ears were ringing, and I couldn't catch my breath. I could really, really use $2,000. Are you kidding?
No. Plus, whatever clothes you buy, if you want to buy any.
I gaped at him, doubly dumbfounded. $1,000 for one night? For me to show up and eat free food? For me to hang on his arm and wear new clothes? What is this life? Nothing about it was my fantasy, except maybe the free food and money part, but the whole setup certainly sounded like someone's fantasy. And I really, really need that money. A voice in the back of my head reminded me of the hard-earned lesson. If it seems too good to be true, it is. And I swallowed against a rising trepidation. There had to be a catch. He studied me while I grappled with his offer, eventually asking softly,
"Why the hesitation? Is it me?"
"No, it's not you. It's..." I gave my head several firm shakes to clear it, feeling like I was forgetting something important. How would this work in the long run? Would it be 1,000 per event? Hourly? Would there be a contract? Is there dental?
Do you need dental?
He glanced at my teeth. Not necessarily. I'm just trying to understand how it'll work. This is a lot. And it felt like there had to be a catch. A shoe that would drop at the very worst moment. A hidden footnote spelling doom. And yet, though I was certain this deal could not possibly be as straightforward as he made it sound, I was considering his offer. It felt overwhelming. I knew it would be a disruption to the quiet existence I'd carved out. So maybe that was the catch? Maybe the disruption to my orderly life was the catch.
"If you agreed, you could write your own ticket,"
he said.
"I'll put it into your prenup, whatever you want, I promise."
This promise didn't put me at ease. In fact, it had the opposite effect. It made me feel like maybe I was taking advantage of him. "Have you really thought about this? I mean, marriage?" I blurted, feeling agitated and restless. "Lying to your family?"
"I have, and I'm fine with it."
His statement surprised me, especially how quickly and simply he said the words. "Really?" I asked, disbelieving. "Would they come to the wedding? What about holidays? Will we attend every Thanksgiving and Christmas pretending like we're married? How is that going to work?"
"Even if this were real, I wouldn't invite them to the wedding. I have to work Thanksgivings, and I haven't spent a Christmas with my dad or siblings since before college."
Rex's tone was flat and hard, as were his eyes. I frowned, considering what I knew about him and his somewhat tangled family tree. Rex's brother and sister were significantly older than him, and the product of his father's first marriage. Rex was the only child of his father's second marriage, which had been short and resulted in a messy divorce. To my knowledge, Rex had never been close with his older siblings. Before his mother had passed away, I knew Rex was more like the parent in that relationship. Same with his father. Rex had been the responsible, serious child to his father's gregarious, fun-loving personality. I liked Rex's dad. Everyone in Allenbach did. But Rex's father was now on his fourth marriage, or maybe fifth. His current wife had been a flight attendant before marrying Rex's dad, and what little I knew about her from my high school friends who still lived in our hometown seemed really nice. What about your Aunt Sally? I supposed I could understand Rex's antipathy toward his half-siblings, and maybe even his father, but Rex's Aunt Sally was a different story. From all outward appearances, Rex's aunt on his father's side had been the only constant and steady adult influence in his life. The hard lines around his mouth and eyes softened. I thought I detected a smidge of regret.
She wants me settled. This should make her happy.
But why get married at all? Why not just get engaged? He shook his head stubbornly.
Engagements are broken. Marriage is supposed to be permanent. I want a permanent fix. I want to end the speculation and attention. Even when we divorce, whenever you've had enough, the situation will still be permanently resolved because we were married.
You're telling me I can end this whenever I want?
Yes, absolutely. I'll write that into the prenup. The moment you want to stop, we stop.
I couldn't quite draw a full breath. Rex.
No. Listen a second. It would be such a relief to not have to think about it anymore.
His voice roughened, and my heart squeezed.
You would be doing me a favor to stop the pundits, to have someone I trust there with me at these events, someone who isn't going to make me look like a fool after the fact.
Ugh. He needed me. Unable to help myself, I placed my hand on Rex's shoulder and rubbed a comforting circle on his back. I forgot for a moment who he was and saw only his sadness, his frustration, someone who needed help. You could never look like a fool. I tried to soothe, then regretted the words immediately because they were inane. Of course he could look like a fool. Anyone alive or dead could look like a fool. The only requirement for looking like a fool was being human. And you've really never thought.